Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
It is a bit surprising and a bit confusing as to, you know, why the Corps entertained the appeal.
The Army Corps of Engineers reconsiders an important pebble mine permit. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 26th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Alaska Senate has its own proposal to increase student funding.
There was substantial support for the kids to increase that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by SNAP.
The Alaska Senate is set to propose a one-time boost to the amount of money allocated to each student in public schools around the state. The Senate Finance Committee proposed a 15% increase to the current amount the state gives school districts per student. Finance Committee Co-Chair Bert Stedman says the funding is an increase from a plan floated earlier in the week.
And under further consideration within the Senate, there was substantial support for the kids to increase that. So we have now put on the table a $680 increase.
The funding amount is disappointing to education advocates. They argue the per-student funding formula has hardly budged for years, even with sharp inflation. Lon Garrison, director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, says he's thankful for any increase in funding, but he says districts realistically would need double that to keep up with steep inflation in the past several years.
It always means that we're probably going to lose a teacher or a program or something or an opportunity for students to get a great education in the state of Alaska.
Stedman told reporters he hopes to put the plan to the full Senate for a vote next week. From there, the House and Senate would have to agree on a budget plan, which faces challenges over the amount of the permanent fund dividend. The Senate is sticking with its plan to pay out a $1,300 dividend, much lower than the $2,700 the House majority is proposing. The two chambers will have to find a compromise before the constitutional end of the session in about 20 days. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will reconsider the Pebble Mines permit proposal to build at the headwaters of Bristol Bay. The announcement comes just 3 months after the Environmental Protection Agency vetoed the project under a separate process. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more.
Dennis McLaren was the region's EPA administrator during the Obama presidency and now works at a law firm in Seattle.
It's a bit surprising and a bit confusing.
The EPA exercised its authority under the Clean Water Act to stop Pebble in January. It determined that such a mine would have unacceptable adverse effects on salmon fishery areas around the mine site, and many opponents of the project hailed that as the final blow. McLaren says that decision precludes any permit issued by the Army Corps.
EPA has now made a final determination, and so in any event, the Corps could not issue a 404 permit for the mine. So it is a bit surprising and a bit confusing as to, you know, why the Corps entertained the appeal and issued, you know, a remand on it.
In 2020, the Corps rejected Pebble's federal permit application to build a large open-pit copper and gold mine. The company appealed that decision. In its Tuesday announcement, the Corps' Pacific Ocean Division engineer, Kirk Gibbs, said he found specific portions of Pebble's appeal warranted another look, although that doesn't mean the Corps will reauthorize Pebble's permit. Pebble spokesperson Mike Heatwell says the announcement shows the company's appeal holds water, and he says they want the mine to meet environmental requirements for permitting.
A mine in Alaska and in the United States has to coexist with that fishery. You know, we view that as very important. We know that for the residents of Bristol Bay, it's an important, not only commercial, but cultural resource. And all of that has to be factored into this project.
At the heart of the Corps' decision is whether its permit denial adequately assesses the risks the mine would pose to the environment. Mine opponents like United Tribes of Bristol Bay Executive Director Alana Hurley say it's another reason why they are pursuing watershed-wide protections through federal legislation.
Not only to address this project with this company that is refusing to give up, but the many other active mining claims throughout the region.
The Army Corps' Alaska District now has to review the decision to deny Pebble a federal permit and take the EPA's veto into consideration in the process. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola is losing her chief of staff. Alex Ortiz was the last chief of staff for Peltola's predecessor, Congressman Don Young. Peltola hired Ortiz after she won the special election to fill out the remainder of Young's term, while she was still campaigning to win a full term. The hiring of Ortiz helped smooth the transition and projected to voters that she intended to cross partisan lines and to fulfill Young's legacy. Peltola says Ortiz will serve an important role with her 2024 campaign, leading outreach to his home region of Southeast Alaska and to Republicans. Ortiz plans to launch a career in government relations. Deputy Chief of Staff Anton McParland will take over Ortiz's official duties. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, St. Paul residents aim to establish a marine sanctuary around the island.
It's not a boogeyman. It's just an attempt to try to take care of our home.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Alaska's Army National Guard recently sent a Black Hawk helicopter to a permanent station in Bethel. The goal is to speed up search and rescue operations. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello took a ride with Bethel's emergency personnel as they learned how to get comfortable in the sky.
3-5, traffic on the short final for only one right is assessing additional traffic on the right base to the left. Another assessing even farther up the side.
Yeah, I got the number 2 Cessna on base in sight. 3-5.
A couple of pilots from the Alaska Army National Guard flew their Black Hawk helicopter around the Bethel area Monday morning.
This morning, we were flying some of the local firefighters and EMTs for familiarization of the area from the air.
That's Chief Warrant Officer 2, Morgan Osborne. The 29-year-old co-pilot from Anchorage is stationed in Bryant Army Airfield, but travels to Bethel to help out.
We flew over the Kuskokwim, checking for any kind of flooding in addition to flying the area that the Bethel Fire Department covers.
The crew doesn't have an Army medic or emergency medical technician, but they respond to search and rescue calls. So when they pick someone up in distress, they have to transport them to the nearest hospital or medical clinic.
We typically will pick them up, bring them here to the hangar, and then the fire department and EMTs will bring a emergency vehicle to the flight line and will transfer the patient from our helicopter to their vehicle.
But that takes time, and when someone is severely injured or survives a crash, every second counts.
Just because sometimes when we do have plane crashes in the region, they do ask us for medical personnel, for EMTs, to respond with them.
That's Bethel Fire Chief Darren Soulsby. He brought along with him another firefighter and 2 EMTs. Flying in a Black Hawk is awesome, but you can get hurt if you don't know how to do basic things like climb in and out of it.
And it's just a really good idea to have my guys, number one, be familiar with the overview of the aircraft, and also what to do, you know, if there's emergencies and they need to know how the helicopter flies around.
This type of integration, teamwork, and realistic cross-training is really important in remote Alaska.
We've done emergency operations training, simulations if the Black Hawk crashed, and how to shut down the fuel, shut down the engines, and extricate the crew members. But this is actually the first time our department's done cross-training where we actually involve a real flight.
The Bethel Fire Department response area is about 44 square miles. That's a lot of ground to cover.
So we went down just past Oscarville and then all the way up around the top end of Church Slough, Queethluck area, and just let everybody see what it looks like from the air, because not a lot of these guys have taken small planes to the villages or anything. We only know what it's like on the ground level. So when you're up in the helicopter, you actually get to see how it's all laid out, and it's good familiarity training.
These types of partnerships and training opportunities will be crucial as we head into river breakup season. In a Black Hawk flying around in Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
The tribal government in St. Paul nominated a region around their Bering Sea island for consideration as a National Marine Sanctuary. If approved, the sanctuary would be the first of its kind in Alaska. As KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports, commercial fishing representatives railed against the proposal during a recent meeting in Anchorage hosted by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Our home, the Pribilof Islands, rise from the fog of the Bering Sea 300 miles off the coast of Alaska.
This video was made by the Aleut community of St. Paul, the tribe for the Pribilof Island community of around 500 people. It opens on a low-lying island, green and flat. A group of seals splashes through blue waves and white foam. And it cuts to a close-up of a northern fur seal groaning to reveal dog-like teeth.
Visitors find our islands astonishing. They marvel at the amazing numbers of seals, birds, and fish.
The video is promoting a national marine sanctuary in the Bering Sea, which the tribe says would give them greater authority to protect the region's vast ecosystems and resources, rich fishing grounds, and habitat for the federally protected northern fur seal.
We formally nominated an area around the Pribilofs as Alagoum Cano, or Heart of the Ocean, as a co-managed ecosystem.
Lauren Devine is the director for the tribe's Ecosystem Conservation Office. And she says the sanctuary designation would make the tribe a co-manager for the region's resources, which are currently managed by the state of Alaska and the National Marine Fisheries Service.
That co-management aspect is really important because it's a step towards self-determination, you know, sovereignty, and really speaks to going back to indigenous stewardship of lands and waters, which, you know, have operated successfully and sustainably since time immemorial.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration accepted the tribe's nomination last year, and that set off panic bells in the commercial fishing industry. Many in the fishing industry have voiced concern about the sanctuary, even though NOAA and the tribe say it would not change fishing regulations. Dennis Robinson is the president of the Kowalungan Tribe of Unalaska, where he's also the city's vice mayor. He's concerned this will bring in another voice to what he says is already a well-managed fishing zone.
It's the best managed fisheries in the world, and you want to put a sanctuary in it. We are opposed to it.
A big concern for opponents is the Bering Sea Alaska pollock fishery. It's not only the largest fishery in the region, it's actually the largest fishery in the United States. And NOAA valued the 2021 fishery at about $383 million.
There's thousands and thousands of fishermen that depend on this area.
Todd Loomis is the director for Ocean Peace, a commercial fishing company that runs a half dozen catcher processor boats in the area. After watching a presentation about the sanctuary nomination process, he told NOAA representatives that it was still confusing and uncertainty was bad for business.
I saw a lot of wiggle words in terms of the authorities, what applies, what doesn't apply, and it did not provide any comfort.
The issue has caused so much rancor that both of Alaska's U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan chimed in. In February, they wrote a joint letter to the head of NOAA asking for the nomination to be removed due to a lack of transparency of the process. Now, despite the industry's fears, supporters of the sanctuary say it would not impose any new fishing regulations. Lauren Devine from the tribe says the proposed designation would not prevent fishing in the region, and any new regulations would have to go through the North Pacific Fishery Management Council like they already do.
So it is important to note that, you know, commercial fisheries will continue into the future. Subsistence fisheries will continue into the future. Sanctuaries actually, by legal definition, cannot exclude fisheries. That's not an activity that they can prohibit.
Devine says the purpose is to serve as a spotlight, bringing tourism, research, and education dollars to the region. Now, while the Bering Sea is incredibly rich and biodiverse, it's also experiencing vast changes, largely due to climate change. Seabirds, fish, and marine mammals have all been impacted. George Pletnikoff is from St. George, a neighboring community to St. Paul. He said at the NOAA meeting that pushback against the sanctuary has been based on misinformation and scare tactics.
It's not a boogeyman. It's just an attempt to try to take care of our home. It's dying, and all of you know it's dying. And so that's what we're trying to do. And I don't know other ways to do it.
The sanctuary process is long and complicated. While NOAA has accepted St. Paul's nomination, representatives from the federal agency said they have not made a decision about initiating the next step, which would be a multi-year designation process. Reporting from Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
The Chilkat River has been nominated as one of 10 most endangered rivers in the country. The nominations are meant to bring attention to threats to the nation's waterways and point to actions that can be taken to protect them. KHNS's Alan DePremenil has more.
Every year for the last 40 years, the nonprofit American Rivers has issued a list of the country's 10 most endangered rivers. David Morick is a director at American Rivers. He explained the logic behind the designations.
It's a combination of the actual threat to the river, the importance of the river from a state, regional, or national perspective, and also often we'll take into account whether or not the threats facing that river are facing other rivers. Is it emblematic of a larger issue?
The threats are varied. Number one on the list of endangered rivers is the Colorado, threatened by climate change and water management policies. Coming at number 8 is the Chilkat-Klehini River System. Morick cites mining as the biggest threat facing the river, specifically the Palmer Project, which is a proposed copper-silver-zinc mine near the headwaters.
We're really concerned about potentially contaminated wastewater discharges.
While mining has historically taken place in the Chilkat Valley watershed, the scale is not comparable. The next phase of the Palmer Project is to drill a mile-long exploratory tunnel under a glacier. Haines resident Gershon Cohen is project director at Alaska Clean Water Advocacy. He says the discharge will be too close to important streams.
The area where they will be discharging, in their estimate, is 350,000 gallons a day of what will be a contaminated discharge contaminated with heavy metals, with explosives residues, with hydrocarbons from the drilling process and all the vehicle equipment. That discharge is going to be literally adjacent to Glacier Creek, the second largest producing coho stream in Southeast Alaska.
The American Rivers website encourages the public to send a letter to Congress about the river. The aim is to force the mining company to obtain a stringent surface water discharge permit. Currently, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation requires a groundwater discharge permit. Cohen says this is not enough.
Chances are very high that that discharge is going to make its way to the river, which means that according to federal law, they're supposed to get a surface water discharge permit. A groundwater discharge permit, as they are now getting from DEC, does not require you to meet water quality standards. It has very little, if any, monitoring and enforcement. It's a very different permit than the federal permit, and we want DEC to do their job.
In a press release from American Rivers, Chilkat Indian Village President Kimberly Strong is quoted as saying, "Our ability to live off the land and continue to harvest the wild stocks of salmon, to hunt the bear, and gather the berries that grow in our traditional territory sustains us today, as it has since time immemorial. The natural riches of these lands and water have allowed our people not only to survive, but to thrive for untold generations. Endangering the Chilkat River ecosystem with a hard rock mine will have devastating effects on our tribal people that rely on the Chilkat River and Chilkat Valley as our sustainable food source." American Pacific Mining, who operates the Palmer Project, did not answer a request for comments. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremino.
Earth Day was last Saturday, and Kodiak Kindness, a local nonprofit, hosted its third annual trash cleanup. As KMXD's Brian Venois reports, volunteers picked up thousands of pounds of trash at the organization's biggest event yet.
Heather Priest is the executive director of Kodiak Kindness. She says 66 folks came to pick up trash along the road between Mill Bay and White Sands Beaches.
And in 3 hours? Oh my gosh. It was like more than 1,000 pounds of trash an hour. We took 3,660 pounds of trash to the landfill on Saturday in 12 truckloads.
That was more than the previous 2 years combined. The nonprofit usually focuses on supporting young families with newborns and educating new parents, but in the last few years, they've begun hosting a spring trash pickup event. Priest says the idea is to create a cleaner environment for kids to grow up in. The event is usually sponsored by Matson, which pays for necessities like landfill fees, bags, and vests. This year, the shipping company was joined by other businesses that wanted to donate to Kodiak Kindness and send volunteers.
All week, I was thinking, is the snow going to melt so we can see the trash we need to pick up? But Saturday was so beautiful, and we had great, great weather.
Priest says they were even able to pick up large debris with heavy equipment. She says one of her favorite things to see at this year's cleanup was a large magnet that Matson brought.
So you just drag them along the beach and they suck up all the nails from pallet fires on the beach. You know, so kids and dogs that are out picnicking, they don't like step on a nail.
But despite all the fun, Priest says there's still more work to do.
There's still more out there. I mean, we just kind of had to stop because it was 4 o'clock and the landfill was closed.
Priest says the success of this year's garbage pickup is already inspiring her to keep growing the event more next year. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
An 18-year effort to develop a National Veterans Cemetery near Fairbanks may finally come to fruition. Two previous attempts to site a vet's cemetery near Fox and Esther failed due to permafrost and contamination issues, but a new proposal to locate one in Salcha appears to be on track. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, if funding is secured, construction could begin next year.
Former state lawmaker David Guttenberg says he began working on legislation to develop a new veterans cemetery in 2005, soon after he learned that his longtime friend and Marine Corps veteran Rick Rothley had died.
His widow, who was also a retired member of the service, came to me and said, Rick wanted to be buried here, and he couldn't be buried here because there's no vet cemetery here.
That's a common concern among the senior cohort of Alaska's veterans who live in the interior, says Hank Bartos, an elderly Air Force veteran who heads up a Fairbanks-based group called Veterans for Justice.
people in this area that are like me, high mileage, don't have to worry about where you're going to be planted because we've got one of the best spots in the nation.
That 257-acre spot is located on a hilltop off Johnson Road, about 30 miles south of Fairbanks off the Richardson Highway. Bartos recently told members of the North Pole City Council that Veterans for Justice located the site after checking out dozens of other parcels around Fairbanks.
It is an absolutely perfect place. This overlooks the entire valley, the river. It's just a great spot.
Bartos said the state paid about $800,000 for the property in December after the project had cleared the first hurdle toward qualifying for a $16 million federal grant to develop the cemetery.
All we need is funding.
Bartos asked the North Pole Council last week to support the project, and in response, it unanimously passed a resolution similar to one approved last month by the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. State Office of Veterans Affairs Director Verdi Bowen says those expressions of public support are essential to qualifying for federal vet cemetery grants.
The people up north are really supporting this project.
Bowen says the Federal Veterans Cemetery Grant Program may reimburse the state for the land, and it'll pay for development of what would be called the Interior Alaska State Veterans Cemetery. It would be the state's fourth cemetery for vets. The others are national cemeteries at Sitka and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, and there's a tribal cemetery in Metlakatla. He says if the Salcha Cemetery gets a grant, the state would pay its estimated $1 million annual operating costs.
It'll be the first state-operated cemetery, and it's also going to be the one that is the farthest north.
Bowen says if all goes well and the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs awards the grant, work could begin as early as next year. But he cautions that the grant program is strapped for cash due to growing operational costs for existing veterans cemeteries around the country. So he's been working with Alaska's congressional delegation to support legislation to add some $200 million to the federal grant program.
So if they add more funds this year, then we have an opportunity. If they don't add more funds, then it most likely will be the following year.
The need is great, Bowen says. He says Alaska has about 69,000 veterans, by far the highest number per capita than any other state. And he says 16,000 of those vets are older than 65.
And that's why it's important to get this cemetery in place before we really, you know, get hit with a large need.
Bowen thinks the prospects of state and federal funding for the Salcha Cemetery project look more promising than any previous proposal. Guttenberg, the ex-state representative who introduced three vet cemetery measures that failed, hopes Bowen is right about that.
These guys deserve more than we've given them. And, you know, it's a moral obligation that we have and we have not followed through.
Guttenberg says he'll be tracking the progress of this most recent effort to provide a final resting place for veterans who live in the interior. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Lex Trinan in Anchorage, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Francisco Martinez-Cuello in Bethel, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, Alan DePremenil in Haines, Brian Benoit in Kodiak, and Tim Ellis in Delta Junction. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer tonight is the award-winning Dave Emmert. Tim Rocky is our producer. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities. From Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.